From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the third day of July, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. And we'll discuss today's cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Grain Elevator located in Lexington. In agricultural news, the Texas governor has been caught putting his hand a little too deep in the pocket as it relates to ethanol. We'll have more on that story shortly. And then we'll talk just a bit about tank mixes and glyphosate-resistant soybeans. And at the end of the half hour, we'll take a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL, public radio from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
Here's the way the trade finished for the day and the week on a Thursday in Chicago, a trade holiday week, shortened up by a day for July 4th. In the corn pit, nearby contract was down 2¾ cents at $7.46 for the day. September at $7.57¾, down 3¼. And December futures in the corn at $7.77, down 3½ cents. March contract at $7.94, down 3¾. July wheat futures, $8.72¾, 7½ cents higher on the day. September at $8.87½, up 7¼. And December futures, $9.10¼, up 6¾. July soybean futures, $16.58, 12¼ higher. August at $16.49, up 9½ cents. September, $16.37¼, up 5¼. November beans at $16.31, up a penny on the afternoon. July bean meal futures at $4.50, up $6.70. That's $450.50, up $6.70. And July bean oil at $67.33, down 44. August live cattle at $103.80, down 20 cents. October futures 22½ lower at $111.52½. And the feeders are trading the August contract at $111.57½, down 57½ cents for the week. September feeder cattle at $113.20, down 42½. July lean hog futures at $72.27½, finished the week 45 cents higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from WILL in Urbana, Illinois. Here's some of the outside market numbers for the afternoon. Crude oil futures trading the August contract at this hour, $145.03 a barrel, up $1.46. September futures at $145.20, they're up $1.06 for the day. July ethanol at $2.86¾, that's just 0.2 cents higher. August futures at $2.88¼, up 2¾ cents. Natural gas at $13.57¼, up 18¾ cents for the nearby contract. And the August heating oil, that's diesel fuel, at $4.10¼, up 3½ cents for the day. August propane trading today, 5¼ cents higher at $1.92¼. Gold futures are trading the nearby July contract at $931.90, down $12.90 at this hour. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 11,288. It's just about 73 points higher for the day. The U.S. dollar at 72.73. That's up 70 cents on the afternoon. Here's what the forecast looks like for the two-state region as we head into July 4th tonight. Our own Ed Kieser says in northern Illinois and far northern Indiana, skies will be partly cloudy. In central sections, mostly cloudy, a few scattered showers. In the south, cloudy and scattered showers, a few thunderstorms. Lows will range this evening from 54 in the north to 66 in the far south. Tomorrow, in the north, mostly sunny. In central sections, a mix of clouds and sunshine, a few scattered showers. In the south, mostly cloudy, showers and thunderstorms. Highs tomorrow ranging from 72 near Lake Michigan to 82 in the south. On Saturday and Sunday, mostly dry weather expected, along with what he calls tolerable levels of humidity. We'll have more on the weather just after the bottom of the hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Lernard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
You are in, I believe, Texas today, right?
Yes, I am in Aggieland, Texas A&M country.
Oh, and they're harvesting corn down there near Texas A&M, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Believe it or not, they are shelling corn. Yields are coming in a little less than probably average because they didn't catch any of the early May rains that we caught up north. Their yields are kind of coming in about 120 or so, which is not too bad for dry land Texas. So, of course, this corn was planted back in March. They're harvesting pretty well, going to be widespread harvest here over the next 2 weeks. Of course, Texas is not a real big corn state, but they are harvesting some of that yellow gold.
Yeah, indeed, a little yellow gold. They're bigger on crude oil and black gold, I believe, than they are on corn.
They got it all down here.
They do. Are you visiting Texas A&M, another land grant? I'm not really
well,
happy.
My daughter goes to Texas A&M, so that's she's in between summer breaks. So we, as a family, took this week off to come down and visit her and spend some time with her.
Well, congratulations. At least it's a land grant institution. That's what I care about more. So this is not Illinois, but Texas A&M's a land grant nonetheless. We better talk about the marketplace just a little bit. Let's start back on Monday because it's been kind of an interesting week. Monday morning, of course, USDA releasing some bearish numbers for the corn. Futures were down the limit. They tried a little bit to recover on the overnight trade Monday and had a weak lower day on Tuesday and then came roaring back Wednesday. And well, today they finished up lower again in the corn pit, just down a couple cents. For the week, though, they were down 8 cents. Does this tell you anything about the market?
Well, I think the way the market came back from that limit down move, and I know the trade initial reaction to USDA's report is bearish, but there's really nothing bearish on the corn supply-demand table. I know the number came in a little higher than what the trade was looking at, but that doesn't mean that USDA's number was correct. They're going to resurvey acres, and we'll see what the acres are going to be on the August report. And the harvested acre that they're using at 90% or so of planted, they may be too high on that. So I still think there's some unknowns yet to be done on the corn, especially we still have to go through the yield process. We've got a lot of different maturity levels in corn across the main growing area. So as far as I was concerned, a limit down move was probably too much for that report. But I know the traders react and they think, you know, a government report's the holy gospel, but it really isn't. But they have to react to that anyway.
Are you satisfied that we'll be consolidating as long as weather is normal from now until the August report, or is there more upside potential, downside potential in the market?
Well, I think there's more upside potential. I think supply and demand has a lot to do with it, and there's no doubt that corn prices did reach a level that we have slowed demand. The only question now is, have we slowed it enough, or has it just been a temporary slowing at these price levels? And of course, the growing season, we got a lot to go through yet. Well, whether or not it's the pollination weather or whether or not it's an early fall frost, we've got all kinds of weather issues in front of us. And I guess I look at the corn market as consolidating before it moves higher. And we'll have to kind of take it from there. There's more room to go up in that corn. There's a lot of $8 type objectives up there for corn to go after, and, you know, even some nines. But, you know, that's all going to have to be played out during pollination weather and then maybe the August crop report. But I don't think the market is going to be comfortable with any kind of production estimate until we see what the August report is. So this market may, you know, it could hang in here, even go higher into the August crop report, and we'll see what kind of numbers we get there and then whether or not it wants to continue in a counter-seasonal move. We've been working a counter-seasonal pattern in corn, and I guess until we break that counter-seasonal pattern, I guess I got to be kind of in the camp that maybe this corn market might continue to strengthen all the way into the fall.
Do you think that at this point the livestock industry has been forced to do more than considering liquidation? Have they really thought about it, and will they start?
Well, I think the market may have to put some more pain on the livestock industry. I mean, I think that latest Hogs and Pigs report showed some slowdown in breeding herds, but I think all hogs and pig numbers are up from a year ago. So there's no consumption demand backing off there over the next few months. So I think, you know, at least looking at that side of the equation, there's more to be done on the livestock sector.
Did you read the Houston Chronicle article yesterday or get it emailed to you with Bo Pilgrim and what the governor were doing down there as they put together this idea that the governor wanted to have an RFS waiver? Did you catch
it? No, I haven't read any of that. No.
Well, I really wanted to ask you about that, but we'll leave it be. Apparently, Bo Pilgrim.
Well, there's an awful lot of people want to push these prices down. I can't understand it, Todd, but there's more people wanting prices to go down than up. So that being an old contrarian, that tells me until they all give up on trying to get this thing to go down, it's going to keep going higher. And you could just see Congress's, you know, hearings they had here about a week ago about crude oil prices and what's happened since they had their hearings.
Well, I don't know. We'll see how
it
all shakes out, I guess. I'm sorry?
They're still selling trucks down in Texas.
New ones?
New ones. They're still selling. They've slowed the sales up a little bit, but, you know, $7 corn and 120 bushels is pretty good income for these guys down here.
All right.
That gives them enough money to buy a new diesel pickup truck.
Well, it'll be high-priced diesel they'll put in it, I suppose.
They'll put biodiesel in it. They'll help out their industry.
Indeed. Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
No, that's about it.
All right. Thanks much.
You're welcome.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois, joining us from the great state of Texas, where I think he was probably located at or at least very near Texas A&M, another land-grant institution. He comes to us each and every Thursday afternoon right here on the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
In today's agricultural news, just one story, this from the Houston Chronicle. It says Governor Rick Perry of Texas requested his federal waiver on the corn-based ethanol production mandates. It was prompted by a March meeting he had with East Texas poultry producer Lonnie Bo Pilgrim. Pilgrim, 6 days later, gave $100,000 to the Republican Governors Association that happens to be chaired by the Texas governor. The article goes on to note that the 596 pages worth of records produced by the governor's office that were prepared to submit for the waiver followed the donation given on March the 31st. Perry requested the waiver despite an April 10 Texas A&M study that showed a waiver of federal mandates on ethanol production would have little or no effect in driving down the price of feed corn for poultry and livestock. The A&M study blamed rising corn prices on the cost of oil, global demands for corn, and commodity speculation. However, Perry requested a second study of A&M that wasn't released until June. That study states that if corn is short because of floods in the Midwest this year, a waiver would significantly decrease the cost of corn. And that's a quick look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of WILL, public radio for the farming world. I'm Todd Gleason, your host, urging you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org, where you'll find this program, other agricultural programming, and Commodity Week, our weekly half-hour look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture. Our guest this week is Extension Ag Economist from the U of I, Daryl Good. We'll post that program to the website this evening, Thursday evening, by about 6 p.m. You know, the use of Roundup Ready soybeans has entered its second decade, and after more than 10 years on the marketplace and becoming the primary seed source for U.S. farmers, the herbicide-resistant bean is sometimes needing more weed protection than its glyphosate partner can provide. Monsanto, of course, released the Roundup Ready bean technology in the mid-1990s. Today, 10 years of that constant use and widespread adoption of the technology is putting pressure on its performance, says University of Illinois weed scientist Aaron Hager.
As a matter of fact, we would suggest that the utility of glyphosate as a single standalone active ingredient for weed control in soybean is, from this point on, probably going to decline in terms of the frequency of acres for which it's going to be a complete and total herbicide for farmers.
Some weeds have developed resistant populations, and other crops have been genetically altered to resist the herbicide too. Aaron Hager says it means there are increasing instances where farmers should use a second herbicide tank mixed with glyphosate to achieve adequate weed control. For instance, he says the tank mix is definitely needed to control glyphosate-resistant volunteer corn in a bean field, but that's not a tough one to figure out.
There'd be some certain annual broadleaf species that glyphosate alone can be very weak on, or can be weak on at the very common use rates that many soybean farmers apply glyphosate. For example, morning glories, very challenging species for rates of glyphosate around the 3/4 pound acid equivalent per acre rate, especially if the applications are delayed until the morning glories are perhaps 6 inches or greater in length. These types of scenarios, tank mix partner with glyphosate, could actually give some increased control of the morning glories. There are other types of vining species, for example, burr cucumber, a very challenging species because of its extended and late emergence in soybean. Glyphosate alone can do fairly good on burr cucumber, but tank mix partners that have some soil residual activity may actually provide some residual control of any of the burr cucumber that would emerge after the glyphosate application was made.
Morning glory and burr cucumber. Now, these aren't exactly the most meddlesome of weed species, but examples of weeds glyphosate could use a little help controlling. Tougher problems have developed over the years. Farmers in Indiana and Ohio are battling glyphosate-resistant giant ragweed. Their extension weed scientists have reported some success tank mixing glyphosate. Illinois farmers are dealing with glyphosate-resistant water hemp. Here's an example where tank mixing might cause more problems than it solves. Most farmers won't know if they have a glyphosate-resistant water hemp. In fact, they probably don't, but it's possible. It's much more likely the water hemp is resistant to the PPO. But let's say it's not. Aaron Hager says tank mixing a contact killer like a PPO herbicide with a translocating killer like glyphosate might not work so well together. There isn't evidence one way or the other, really, but it could be that one or the other of the products and its suggested additives will cause poor performance. He's doing experiments now to figure that out. He suggests trying to control water hemp this year with glyphosate only when it's 3 to 5 inches tall, and scouting 7 days later, and then coming back with a full rate of a PPO and its additives by themselves as soon as possible if the water hemp was not controlled the first time around. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's a Thursday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Time to take our look at the cash grain market. Bill Mara of Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington joins us this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, the last trading day before the July 4th holiday. Did the week go as you thought?
Yeah, it was definitely full of surprises, I guess. But I guess it pretty much went as I thought, as we saw two limit or near limit moves on corn in opposite directions in the first 3 days of the trade. So,
yeah, tell me about that limit move yesterday. How did it happen? And those were in two contract months in the back months. I guess they don't really get much trade. May and July, I think, were the contracts. How'd that take place? And then it actually expanded corn limits to 45 cents today, didn't it?
Yeah, really prices moved in general, even in the more active nearby months. Prices moved something like 15 or 16 cents in just the last three minutes or so of the trade yesterday afternoon. There was a few kind of limited number of traders coming in and buying. They tended to kind of come in and buy the close the last, pretty much all week here, except for Monday, of course. Why? I mean, I don't know that there's a good fundamental reason to point to. There was some talk yesterday about some, you know, drier weather coming in and some dome developing, but I don't think that was really it. I think it just was probably some commercial users that wanted to come in and get some coverage on.
And then let's take a look at the basis this week in corn in particular. Has it been holding strong?
No, actually, it's been a little bit weaker. It's kind of the opposite of what you'd expect this week, with bean futures up and corn futures down. The corn base is actually weaker, and the bean basis has been better. You've got wheat harvest getting ready to start. I think there's some space being made to put, you know, some wheat in some of the corn bins maybe. And beans, if the producer hasn't sold beans at this point, he's probably not going to sell them for an additional 5 or 10 cent basis improvement.
Should he sell beans at contract time?
Well, I believe it at 16 plus, yeah, the beans should probably be moved at this level.
Oh, you think $16 is enough for beans?
Well, I don't know that it's the end of where we're going, but I have a hard time advising somebody to not sell $16 beans.
What do you see for next week?
I think we'll see some follow-through on the upside on soybeans. We'll come in and we'll be looking at the weather forecast on Sunday night. That's probably going to determine what the direction is to start with for the week. But I think we're going to see some continued markets like we've seen here, where you have just a 40 to 50 cent move from day to day is not going to be unusual.
And as we head into a time frame where usually the market bottoms out, even if prices in Chicago are not bottoming, the basis will widen as we get into July and August sometimes. And that had a lot to do with government and the need to move corn on the farm. Is that going to happen this year? Probably not.
I don't think we'll see that as much as we have in the past. I don't think that'll be as big a factor. One thing I should point out here is we did see some deliveries this week on soybeans, and I think that did help to bring that bean basis in better, because we weren't up to delivery value equivalent, so there was a commercial that made some delivery.
Thanks much.
Thank you.
Bill Maris with Roach Ag Marketing out of Lexington, Illinois, joins us on a Thursday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
It's National Chocolate Wafer Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1806, Michael Keynes exhibited the first cultivated strawberry, combining size, flavor, and appearance at the Royal Horticultural Society. Europeans discovered wild strawberries in Virginia in 1588. Strawberries, by the way, are the only fruit with its seeds on the outside. In 1922, Fruit Garden and Home magazine was founded. 2 years later, the name of the publication was changed to the name it holds today, Better Homes and Garden. In 1924, Clarence Birdseye, with the financial backing of W. Hodges and others, founded the General Seafood Corporation. In 1929, foam rubber was developed at DuPont Laboratories in Birmingham. British scientist E.A. Murphy used a kitchen mixer to froth natural latex rubber into its foam counterpart. Murphy's colleagues were generally underwhelmed by the material, that is, until they sat on it. By the way, in the early 1950s, Farmall International 100 tractors had seats with tags saying genuine foam rubber to stimulate sales. Foam rubber was replaced by polyurethane in Farmall seats in 1956. And in 1985, the honeybee was designated as the official state insect of Missouri. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Normally on a Thursday afternoon, we'd be joined by Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, but he's made his way from his home in Massachusetts northward and then back to the west just a bit and doesn't really have very good cell reception in the western forest of Maine. So in his stead, Steve Hilberg, our regular Friday analyst, who would have had the day off tomorrow, has agreed to join us this afternoon. Thanks much, Steve.
Sure, Todd.
Steve is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Tell me about the weather for the weekend.
Well, it looks like it'll be steadily improving. Tomorrow could be a little iffy early in the day, especially across the southern half of the state, with maybe some clouds, a few scattered showers, probably a little bit better chance of rain in the south. Most of the rain that we saw this morning has weakened quite a bit. There's a band of showers right now from roughly over Morgan County across Sangamon Christian into Edgar County, and some heavier showers down in Richland and Lawrence County. But things have really become quite a bit weaker and less numerous over the last couple of hours. And we actually see clearing skies in the northern half of Illinois, roughly, as this cooler, drier air mass pushes in. So tomorrow could be sort of a iffy proposition in the south, but by the weekend, by Saturday, we should have some really nice weather across Illinois and Indiana, and that should last into Sunday and even into early Monday.
Iffy weather in the south. How about the northern central parts of Illinois and Indiana? Will they be able to put fireworks in the sky tomorrow night?
It looks like no problem there. Actually, probably in the south by tomorrow evening, things will be in pretty good shape, too. It looks like really we're on the improvement side of things from here on out, so I think in general it looks really good. Next week, we get back to some more typical summer weather. I think almost a chance for rain somewhere in Illinois each day, but a little bit better chance toward midweek as we got another cold front that'll be trying to make its way through Illinois, and that'll probably keep rain chances alive through the last half of next week, and temperatures will be warming up as well.
There were some scare tactics a little earlier in the week from, I think, the GFS about 100-degree temps out in Nebraska. Those have subsided, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, it doesn't look the models sometimes tend to they just really have trouble handling some of these larger changes, and sometimes they indicate changes may change, but not as much. But in general, yeah, we're just pretty much at this point, we just sort of take things a couple of days at a time and not try and get too far ahead on things, especially this time of year.
And finally, Bertha is developing in the Atlantic Ocean.
Well, that's news to me. I hadn't been following the tropics too carefully, but we are in the midst of tropical seasons, which really start at June 1st, so it's not a surprise. But often tropical systems can bring some very beneficial rains to parts of the U.S., so we'll see what happens.
All right. Thanks much, Steve.
All right, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey right here in Champaign County. It's the last trading day of the week. We'll be back on Monday, but of course we've got Commodity Week. We'll record this afternoon and post it to our website at WILLAG.org. Before 6 p.m. this evening, you can pick it up right there.
possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.